from page 42 from the book. UFOs, A Great New Dawn for Humanity. Of Enrique Castillo Rincon. Some words translated to Norwegian in. Chapter 6, The Preparation. Introduction, Enrique Castillo Rincon was in a UFO study group in Bogota, Colombia that for some time, 1972, had received telepathic and automatic writing contact to some Andromeda and Pleiadian spaceships near Earth. At a time they had been told to go to a place to see them, but the group had been watched and others followed them, concealed. Police and the army. But they all saw some lights that some thought to be helicopters, others that they was reflected lights from cars in clouds. Here we enter when these policemen appeared, one of the officers asked what we were doing there. They had been warned by some peasants, Smabend, who had called the central police station after seeing a strange helicopter hovering over the fields. They thought it could be smugglers and decided to warn the authorities. At that time, Colombia had not yet been afflicted by drug trafficking. I immediately associated the strange lights, which we had blamed on cars, with flying saucers. There was no doubt, the country people had seen the same objects. They were not cars, they were. Richard Deeb, the oldest in the group, approached the commander of the patrol and identified himself. As a coincidence, Richard carried a calling card from a friend of his, a general of the Republic. When the officer looked at the card, speechless, he saluted him, thinking he was the general himself. Richard explained to them that our presence at that place and hour was part of certain contemplation and meditation exercises that were to be practiced outdoors. The officer was satisfied and, after looking at the faces of each one in the group, allowed us to go our way. We breathed freely again. At least, for a short while, we had forgotten the purpose of our visit to La Cara. Several country folk around the soldiers stared at us with curiosity. We were a rather unusual sight, at midnight in such a place. We walked down to our cars, without a word, and once inside them agreed to follow exactly the instructions given by the beings from Andromeda. Each of us would await a message the next day at our homes at noon sharp, and at 8 p.m. we would meet at Richard Deeb's home to compare our information. Then we left for our homes. I arrived home very late that night. My wife didn't ask anything. She assumed that I had been busy working late, perhaps installing a computer or taking care of some important business. She had no idea where I had been. The next day was October 12th, Día de la Raza, race day, a holiday in Colombia, celebrated with special ceremonies about the discovery of America. Minutes before noontime, I tried to persuade my wife to leave me alone in the house for a couple of hours. I lived in the Barrio Santa Isabel in Bogotá, well known because of the many emerald traffickers who lived there. My wife protested angrily, and in a moment of rage, confronted me with this statement, "Enrique, if you get involved with those Martians, you are going to become insane." She slammed the door and left with my dog Dingo, who, happily wagging his tail, ran away after her. I was finally alone. I disconnected the doorbell and retired to the bedroom. I readied paper and pencil and sat on the bed, starting my relaxation and concentration exercises. I removed my watch from my left wrist. It was almost 12 o'clock noon. Time passed quickly, but nothing happened. I decided that I was not one of the chosen ones and that I should end the concentration. I got up and walked towards the window. I looked at the sky and asked myself, how can a flying saucer possibly arrive at my home, at 12 o'clock noon, on a holiday, and with all these people on the street? Nonsense. I had barely thought about this folly, when I heard a voice, "Enrique, right." I turned around and, surprised, ran for the bedroom door. I opened it, but there was nobody in the living room. "Enrique, right," the voice repeated. As fast as I could, I took paper and pencil. I looked around, trying to locate the source of that odor. Then I felt the strangest sensation I had ever felt, a steady, buzzing sound, like the sound of bees, affected my ears. Panic got the best of me. The voice persisted. At the center of my brain, I heard a rhythmic drum beat. My breathing sped up abnormally. I held the paper on my legs and started writing what the voice dictated. This was at L2:2 p.m., October 12, 1973, a Friday. Minutes passed, and I wrote. It was my first communication with extraterrestrials. Tears, or perhaps perspiration, dripped on the paper. Pages were filled at the speed that my hands permitted. A strong shivering affected my whole body, and a strange force took hold of me. I was so moved that I could no longer think. The notes had to do with the Third World War. They ended by telling me that there would be no contact that night, but that other space brothers had already arrived. Continue with the group, the voice said. They will get in touch with you. Goodbye. The voice also stressed our poor behavior during the preceding night, during which basic rules of conduct had not been respected, such as when we had argued furiously over the incidents just described. According to them, this line of conduct did not help the group. I trembled when I heard this observation. The communication ended. I stood up and went into the bathroom. I turned on the faucet and looked at the image in the mirror. My eyes were bloodshot. My arms and legs still shook. It was not perspiration that had fallen on the paper. They were tears, which streamed from my eyes uncontrollably. Around my nose and my nails, a purple line appeared. My body itched all over. I washed my face and returned to the bedroom, rested for a while, then gathered and ordered the sheets just written, reading them over carefully. I was deeply moved. I then folded them and put them in my pocket. Then I lay on side of the bed and rested again. Much refreshed, I went back into the bathroom and could see that the purple lines were gone. I washed my face again and felt renewed. I arranged my clothes, reconnected the doorbell, and opened the door of the house. Then I whistled, calling one of my sons, who was playing soccer some 50 meters away. When my family returned, Beatrice could not control her temper. She asked me why I was so pale and again criticized my activities with the UFOs. I had spoiled the lunch hour. At this moment, my brother Roberto arrived, and offhandedly I showed him the written pages. Enrique, where did you get that? I didn't explain anything to him, and he said, I know that the Third World War is being held back, but it will come, no matter what, and that was all. I put the pages back in my pocket and left, seeking the company of a friend of mine, to whom I could relate the recent events. I invited her to the movies, and while there told her about the message. She listened, surprised, and suddenly cut off my monologue with a warning at what she termed as cheap spiritism or imagination. I decided that I would rather not continue with my story. That night, among nightmares and insane thoughts, I barely slept. Flying saucers landed at my house, doors slammed, footsteps echoed through my dreams. The next day, a Saturday, I was late arriving at the office. It was 9 o'clock. Four people from the group were waiting for me. One of them spoke up for the rest, saying, Enrique, Karen is offended. Why didn't you go to the meeting? Several of the group received messages, ordering them to go to such and such places. We were at Fontibon, El Rosal, La Cara, Choki. We waited in vain until 3 a.m. Nobody showed up. I listened to them silently. Calmly, I answered that the reason for my absence was due to the message received the day before, in which the beings from Andromeda informed me that there would be no contact that night. My friends looked at each other. I handed them the handwritten pages, and they read them eagerly. An idea crossed my mind. I warned the four members of the group to maintain their silence about the messages I had received until that night's meeting. I wanted to discover for certain whether anyone else in our group had received a message such as mine. That night, at the moment of reading the messages given to each one, no other messages were announced. All agreed that I had been selected in some way by the beings from Andromeda to relay a message, and that mine was the true message. With this unexpected result, I read aloud the message. No one discussed the truth of my report, it was self-evident. The others didn't want to talk much about the subject, and the meeting proceeded quite like any other. Sitting in our usual places, at 8:15 p.m. on Saturday, October 14, 1973, we started our relaxation. I was sitting with my back to a window that opened to the street. I was dressed in informal clothing, wearing a blue shirt, scarf, and leather jacket. All were looking at Keela. 10 or 15 minutes elapsed with no communication. Then I felt that same buzzing sound, same as the day before. A voice, this time very tenuous, said, "Enrique, write." The message started this way: "We are messengers from Pleiades, the same who gave knowledge to the Inca and other races." Shuddering, very uncomfortable, almost breathless, I tore open my shirt and tossed the scarf away, which landed on Marjorie Holman's lap. This time we were connected to beings from the Pleiades, not Andromeda. I fell into sort of a mediumship spell, with my tongue tied. All my friends noticed it and rubbed their hands and placed them on my head. A new message started, and at that point I lost track of time and place. I remembered nothing. After half an hour, I opened my eyes. Marjorie and Maria Teresa wiped perspiration from my face. Karen was holding my head, and without thinking, I asked, "Karen, what happened?" She replied categorically, "My child, you were gone very far away." The message read that I was the one selected in Colombia by the extraterrestrials to make direct physical contact on a date that they would give soon. Until then, I was the only person in the country to undergo this experience. Paulina, Richard's wife, brought me a cup of warm milk with brandy. I stood up with the same drowsiness as the day before. Marjorie and Jorge Eduardo rubbed my arms vigorously. I was put to bed. Luckily, there was a doctor, Rafael Contreras, who, after examining me using his stethoscope, said that other than a slightly elevated heart rate, I appeared to be in good health. He complained bitterly about not having a movie camera to capture the moment when I drew some strange symbols in the air with my hands. Much of the information given made reference to a golden disc, hidden in a temple in Peru, and to some papyri and manuscripts. Everything had been recorded on tape, and this allowed us to end a small argument over some misinterpreted words. Then we agreed to meet again the following Tuesday. A throbbing headache tormented me each time that communications were received. It was no longer Keela who received the messages, it was I who had to bear the consequences of the communications. The terrible headache forced me to skip work for 2 days. Twice I refused to receive more communications from the extraterrestrials. They said that after 2 or 3 more sessions, the headache would go away. Left to right picture from 1992 Garcia Latorres, Keela, who first received the ET communications. Enrique C. Rincon and Mrs. Marjorie de Holman, in whose home many instructions and messages were received in Bogota. At one time I heard that they were taking measurements of my brain. They even gave a figure. According to them, the vibration rate of my brain was 829 valiums. I thought maybe that was a voltage, the natural frequency of my brain. However, they never clarified this point. It is extremely difficult to put into words the full depth of the meaning of these experiences, because most of the time, with all the attendant reactions and consequences, the impact was blended and interwoven on many levels with internal events, invisible to the eyes of the other people in the group. Karen's role was not clear anymore. She had been the initiator, but once her mission was completed, the shine of her aura faded. Karen insisted on my need to strengthen my bonds with the Overself. I carried out, step by step, her recommended techniques for contacting, but I felt frustrated, for I realized that I lacked the paranormal faculties of others. I tended to blame it on the unconscious. Certainly, I did not know about the forces that dominated us. Anyway, our group was organized, at first with 17 people. Later it grew to 27 members. Because of the importance of the events that sequentially took place, I will give the names of the initial group: 1. Mr. Richard Deeb, 2. Mrs. Paulina Deeb, 3. Marjorie Holman, 4. Maria Teresa Palladino, 5. Grace Ella Torres, Keela, 6. Alfonso Blanco, Poncho, 7. Cosim Maggia, 8. Heber Otto Sedil, 9. Dr. Rafael Contreras, 10. Pedro Avila, 11. Gloria Avila, 12. Alba Avila, daughters of Pedro Avila, 13. Alcides Camilo, 14. Victor Rodriguez, 15. Fernando Marquez, 16. Jorge Eduardo Silva, 17. Adriana Turner, Karen, 18. Enrique Castillo, myself. Sometimes the group grew as a result of invitations made by some of the members. The opposite also occurred. As time passed, several of the members left, convinced that what was going on was fraudulent, or the manifestation of witchcraft, spiritism, or insane minds. Others left because they expected something more spectacular. We met regularly, Tuesdays and Fridays, at 8 p.m., during another communication. We were told about an old temple in ruins in Peru, where the true history of humankind was hidden. But they said that not only in the Peruvian temple was there such information, it was also hidden in different locations in Central and South America, where there are lost cities, located somewhere in the Andean mountain ranges. Once the riddle is put together, with the information taken from temples, pyramids, and forgotten cities, humanity will have no other alternative than to accept the facts of this knowledge, which is quite different from what we are presently taught about the history of the planet. All of this was news to us. We were excited about the possibility that we might be the first to receive such information. In a way, we were a privileged group. Still, sometimes, in spite of having the evidence at our fingertips, we doubted. By the end of October, 1973, the emissaries from Pleiades announced the date of a physical contact with them. The moment had arrived, and we were prepared. The contact, by late October, 1973, during one of the telepathic sessions with the emissaries from Pleiades, they announced to me an appointment for November 3rd, near an undisclosed lake. Having been chosen as the only person in Colombia to undergo such a relationship, I suffered a series of experiences related to its preparation. The first one was during a dream. During four successive nights, I repeatedly saw faces pointing to a lake surrounded by forests and low hills. Unable to explain this to my friends of the group, because they probably would attribute it to abnormal influences over the subconscious, I decided to keep it to myself and to follow through on my own with whatever directions I received. It would have been impossible to explain something that by itself seemed illogical, anyway. Besides, many doubted, given the failed attempt at La Cara, which in spite of having been carefully analyzed, still evoked certain suspicions as to its authenticity. My friends from space, anticipating this, and interested in the success of the mission, intensified their personal communications, detailing the exact coordinates of the place selected for the meeting. Besides this, they gave me a plan to follow, once I arrived at the lake and the forest that surrounded it. I was told to follow the instructions from the dreams, for finding a clearing. There should be a tree, and under its roots, hidden by a medium-sized stone, I should find a sphere, take it in my hand, and walk to the designated place. They set the time for the meeting at 8 p.m. They forbade me to carry any knives, etc. I got up early on Saturday, November 3rd, and afraid of some unforeseen event, alerted my wife and associates to expect a possible absence of a few days, without further explanation. I had lunch as usual and, around 1 in the afternoon, headed for the bus station. The bus left at 3:30 p.m. and was on its way without any unusual incidents, except for the folkloric activities of the many peasants who boarded or left it along the way. After 2.5 hours, I got off the bus. It sped off, leaving behind an annoying cloud of dust. I watched it until it faded in the distance, while reviewing in my mind the sequence of events that would lead me to the physical encounter with the extraterrestrials. My apparel was simple: cotton trousers, working shoes, harana, and a hat, property of Richard Deeb, which made me look like a countryman, so as to avoid arousing any suspicions. After taking a look at the scenery and gathering all my forces, I began walking determinedly. For 2 hours I walked, stopping only to regain my breath, The path was difficult, and the effort made my heart pound. I recalled with some fear my childhood difficulties with asthma. The region was very fertile. Its green color contrasted with the blue sky. Nature's noises didn't predict anything unusual. Once in a while, the acute yell of a woman who was not visible protested for something that I could not perceive, and disturbed my thoughts. Approaching sundown, I arrived at the edge of the lake. Stepping on soft ground covered with abundant vegetation, I sank into the mud and got my boots and feet wet, forcing me to climb back to firm ground and take a detour via a seldom used bridle path. I realized that there were two forests, separated by a finger of the lake, which stretched between them. The water was calm, breaking quite softly against the shore, driven by a very weak but chilling breeze. I checked my automatic watch, trying to figure out if I was going to be on time, and made a renewed effort to move faster. The groups of trees were in front of me. I recognized the first one and walked fast in its direction. When I entered it, I was impressed by the density of the grove. No wonder the extraterrestrials looked for lonely places such as this. The first contact is described on separate site. More from this Colombian contact, part 3, with the upcoming crisis that can lead to war and much more, part 4, contact to Venusians, but is it life there, not in our frequency, but higher up, and more of the possible war, great demonstration of weather control from the ETs. The genetic codes and longer future life, part 5, more on the direct physical contact to Venusians, their cosmic lessons, part 6, from a contact in Christmas -74, taken to a hidden base in the Andes Mountains together with other Earth contactees, where they read a message to the contactees about the Earth, future and how to help our planet. Another contactee from South America, Sixto Paz-Well Stills, sim.translated, in two parts after a short introduction, about the ongoing plus historischt presence and what is about to happen, in two sound files in MP3, taken from a video The Cosmic Plan from 2005 Part 1 / Part 2, his claims his contact began from around -73, in a time frame where a new wave of cosmic contactees was established here on Earth as a preparation for the new cosmic age to begin after 2012 greater than 2028. Read interview with Sixto Paz-Wells on http://www.mysteriousamerica.net/sixtopazwellsint.html. It is to recommend to buy this book of Enrique Castillo Rincon, UFOs a Great New Dawn for Humanity, ISBN for the English version 15773300005 from MIF.1997. 256 pages in format A5 and a lot of pictures. Orders from Blue Dolphin Publishing Incorporated, Box 8, Nevada City, California 95959, in Spanish region, OVNI Gran Albaranda Humana, from April 1995, or try to search on the web for the best price. From Amazon, I booked mine car $20 and 13 in freight to Norway in 1999.